Podcast and Apple Podcast. It's exactly 8:10. And we welcome you to the Friday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. I'm very, very privileged today to be reconnecting with several members of the clergy here in southeastern Wisconsin, clergy with whom I spoke some weeks ago, just before Easter, about what life was like for them and for their respective congregations and parishes in the midst of what was at that point early in the COVID-19 crisis. We find ourselves now on the brink of yet another major holiday in the Christian calendar, namely Pentecost. And this comes just as some communities of faith are beginning to move towards in-person worship once again. And so I'm excited to be able to speak with these same clergy about this shift back to in-person worship and how they and their respective congregations and parishes are handling this. And as we did in that program right before Easter, we are beginning with Father Ricardo Martin, who serves Sacred Heart Parish in Racine. Father Martin, it's great to welcome you back to the morning show. How are you?
I'm doing fine and great to be back with you, Greg.
Very good. So, your parish, just like communities of faith across the country and indeed around the world, are wrestling with the question of whether or not it is safe to return to in-person worship, and if it is, how to do so in a way that maintains the safety of the community as much as possible. First of all, it's probably important for us to understand how a Catholic parish functions in terms of the archdiocese and, in a sense, what authority rests with the archbishop versus with you. I mean, who makes some of these critically important decisions?
It's a very good question, even for Catholics who may not totally understand the dynamic. And in this case, it's very clear the archbishop and the archdiocese proposed this weekend of Pentecost, tomorrow and Sunday, like a possibility to reopen churches with many measures in place to protect the safety of those who decide to come. But at the same time, the Archbishop made it very clear that pastors, hopefully in consultation with their people, parish council, finance council, that they would make the decision to see if they could abide by those measures or not. Here at Sacred Heart, we thought we could. So we made it very clear that we are not trying to make any political statements. You know, that's part of what's going on these days. We just thought that it's been a long time without public masses and that we could abide by the measures dictated by the Archbishop that are more restrictive than the ones that the civil authorities are asking for. So that we simply said that we would reopen and people would think about whether or not they wanted to come, they felt ready to come.
So explain how worship, for instance, on Sunday will be different from what it was 4 or 5 months ago before this thing called COVID-19 entered our lives. Mm-hmm. And in other words, what are the measures that you are planning to put in place to keep people safe who choose to come and worship and in person at Sacred Heart?
Let me explain this in a way. There is an internal document we have with many rules, but then what people have received is a simplified version because many of these things will not affect them too much. Things that they're going to see that they cannot sit wherever they want, that there are some pews that will be blocked so that we keep physical distancing between people living in different households. Communion, instead of people coming to me to receive communion, I will go to them to receive communion. There will be no communion in the cup. We are going to tell them not to sing too much. So things like this. It is very different, but the basic thing is that we are celebrating the Eucharist, which is important to us, and hopefully they will see that that's still there. Mm. One of the issues was a lot of discussion about masks, and the Archbishop used the expression strongly recommended, and that's what we are going to do. We are going to continue live streaming Mass, which has been an incredible success these past 2 months. I just hope people don't get too used to watching Mass on their pajamas and with a cup of coffee, right? That, when, that doesn't affect the decision. So, but we are making it very clear that people can decide. That there's bishop, for Catholics, you know, there is something we call Sunday obligation, and the Archbishop has extended this until July 5th. So anybody, I hope people are making the decision their own. We don't want to decide for them, but I think it's absolutely right if people decide to wait until things are a little better. Mm.
Just to clarify that last point, because I think it's interesting, and not just for Lutherans like me who aren't directly acquainted with this, my understanding is that the Archbishop has extended what is called for Catholics dispensation from that Sunday obligation. Mm. So in other words, yeah, when life is normal, it really is expected, I guess, that a Catholic is receiving communion on a Sunday, and that obligation, in a sense, has been waived until the 5th of July, which leaves people to make their own decisions about this, about whether or not they feel comfortable receiving communion.
Correct. Only that the Sunday obligation is about coming to Mass, not about receiving communion, but that would be splitting hairs for your audience, probably.
Well, I'm glad to understand. I would also like to understand a little more about the way in which you are indeed going to serve communion on Sunday, which, of course, is a decision that some churches are making different choices with and not having communion at all. You are going to be doing it, but doing it a little differently. Explain a little further exactly how it is going to be done and why the way you're going to do it is viewed as perhaps being a measure of safety on behalf of your parish members.
The first thing I will say is that I decided to be tested myself. The only problem is that I cannot give you the results yet, but yesterday I was tested. I wanted to make sure that I would not have COVID myself, so that my distributing communion would be a problem. If I were to give positive, then we have an alternate plan and another priest would celebrate Mass. That was important to me. Hmm. And I would encourage people the test is very quick and not very invasive. So I would encourage people that have any doubts or they have, like me, no symptoms, but we have to be with people this weekend. Hopefully they will consider that. The second thing is that instead of what I was saying before, instead of coming to me, I will come to them and I will be wearing a mask. That's something the Archbishop has asked. If priests distribute communion, then they have to be wearing a mask at that time. So at that time, when I finish what we call the prayer of consecration, I will put on a mask, and then I will go and distribute communion to people. As simple as this. I don't know. The other thing, but that already happened very much at the beginning. We removed the communion in the cup, so there will be only bread, which is for us Catholics, is enough to say that we have received complete communion.
Were these decisions in terms of to resume public worship and in terms of what measures to put in place, were any of these difficult decisions, or were these decisions about which you sort of came to consensus fairly quickly and fairly easily?
So I do have I work part-time at the parish, but I work part-time as a canon lawyer in the archdiocese, so I've been able to see how the process went. There's been a lot of consultation, and I think, and deliberation, and the Archbishop has decided, if it were the opposite, I would tell you, I'm someone who actually tells the truth too often, too much, but he did think about it, he had good people advising him. The measures, at least in a parish like mine, I don't think they are super controversial. For instance, one of the things that the Archbishop did was to ask people to receive communion only in the hand, not on the mouth, which is a right a Catholic has. And here at my parish, that would not be a big issue. And I suppose in other places it would be. You know what I mean? People who very traditionally receive communion in the tongue or on the tongue. Now I'm doubting what's the right preposition. But you know what I mean? And that has been removed. Mm. That would not be a problem at my parish. I think the 3-4% of people who receive in the tongue would adapt. But I know in other places, that's probably the most controversial one. This, I would say, and the masks, because some parishes have decided to make it compulsory, And we know how the mask has become like a political symbol of division. So those would be the two things that I think have been more controversial.
Right. I noticed on your website that if for people who are planning on attending Mass in person, they are being asked to sign up because you are limiting how many people will be allowed into the Sacred Heart Sanctuary. Tell us more about this limitation and if this is also something that aligns with what the Archdiocese is recommending.
So the Archdiocese is recommending a 20% of the occupancy, sorry for the pronunciation of some words, of the permit that you have for like any other business, so to speak. Ours calls for 750 people, so we got to the number of 175 people allowed in church for each of the three masses we have. That was the rule of the Archdiocese, which was consistent, but now we are in these days that legally I'm not sure where we are anymore after the Wisconsin Supreme Court shuts down the safer at home from the governor, but then the city of Racine put something else together. I think they call for the same idea, 25% of the occupancy permit, and that's what we are going to do. Then we ask people to register only to know, more than anything else, to know what kind of, if we had a problem or not. If people would have overwhelmingly signed up, then it would be one thing. What we have found is it will be fine. We will be under 100 people at each of the three masses. So we are fine with this.
Hmm. Is your sense that people, many of your parishioners are really, really excited and anxious to be back together in public worship?
I think everybody is excited, but people are being very prudent and judicious in deciding not to come right away. That's how I would put it. Some of our congregation are people of age, and they are doing the right decision not to come to church right away. So there is this mixing of excitement, because even for those who stay home, this is a step forward that I think we all can appreciate. But many are deciding to stay home, which is fine.
A last question, because I am a singer and care about singing. You mentioned in passing something about how your parishioners are being encouraged. I think you said something like not to sing a lot or not to sing too loudly, or I forget exactly how you said that. But it would be good to just talk about that for a moment.
Sure. And the problem there is that there's been some studies and some conversation around the increased effects of propagation of the virus through singing. That seems to be 7 or 8 times higher than speaking. That's what we have read. So we will have music, we'll have a cantor, we'll have the pianist, we'll have a cello, and the normal instruments we have, but we are going to ask people to contain the joyful singing a little bit, at least until we have a clearer picture of what's going on.
Very good. Father Ricardo Martin serves Sacred Heart Parish in Racine, and his parish's website is sacredheartracine.com. And a statement on the front page of their website includes some of the information that we have talked about, and also a link to a video that was produced by the Archdiocese to assist parishes in making some of these very, very challenging decisions. Father Ricardo Martin,
I happen to be the priest in that video.
Ah.
So I told my parishioners that we elaborated the priest a video for each parish with their own pastor, but that was obviously a joke. Since I worked there, I could easily do that.
Very good. Well, we're glad that you are starring in your first video, and I'm really glad that you could be back to join us on the morning show today. Thank you so much for all that you've shared, and best wishes and blessings to you.
Thank you, Greg.
You're listening to The Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. And now we're going to turn our attention to Reverend Susan Patterson-Sumalt, and she is the senior pastor at First United Methodist Church in Kenosha, a congregation with which I have a fairly extensive connection. Among other things, I've had the privilege of conducting a sing-along Messiah performance there for more than 12, 13 years now, every December. And one hopes that life will allow that to occur this coming December. But in the meantime, what we want to talk with Pastor Patterson Somalt about is this question of resuming live worship and when to do that and how safely to do that. And Reverend Susan Patterson Somalt, we welcome you to the morning show.
Good morning, Greg. It's good to be with you.
I'm glad we can reconnect after our last conversation, which happened right before Easter. This conversation today is right before Pentecost. And it sounds like, unlike Sacred Heart Parish in Racine, First United Methodist is going to be being a bit more cautious in terms of resumption of in-person worship. First of all, for the Methodist Church, whose decision does that end up being? Do you have that decision made, in a sense, above you by the national church office or state church office, or are these decisions that, in a sense, are left to individual congregations to make on their own?
The decision is left to individual congregations to make on their own because the virus is affecting congregations differently geographically as well as the makeup of each congregation. And that's not to say that the state, which we call our annual conference, hasn't offered input and guidance to us, but they recognize that there are individual circumstances that must be paid attention to.
So explain the decision, which at least for the time being has been made for First United Methodist Church.
Correct. We are taking it on a month-to-month basis. We thought we might be able to begin coming back to the building for in-person worship and now looking closer to August. And there are a couple of factors in that as we are working on our re-entry and our relaunching plan. The very first is a theological issue for us. And in our tradition, John Wesley, who was the founder of Methodism, created three simple rules that he hoped would shape the character of our behavior. And the first was, do no harm. And the second is do good, and the third is to stay in love with God. And so it really is focusing on doing no harm and not wanting to bring harm to others unneedlessly with this pandemic happening. The second is that we have been taking a look at not only denominational guidelines, but have been taking a look at state and county guidelines as well. And the county of Kenosha has said that they do not want groups more than 50 in attendance gathering. And our worship attendance is greater than 50, and so we're using that as a guideline. The third piece of that is the majority of our congregants are over the age of 65, and so we are concerned about the population of our congregational members and guests. And so those are probably the three major factors that have been going into our decision-making process.
I wonder how much pressure you have felt from at least some members of your parish to resume in-person worship. I mean, I think probably most people who belong to a church prefer that that church gather together, if such a thing is possible and safe. I wonder how much pressure you have received from parishioners about this, or by and large, do you have a sense that they want to be cautious as well and are gladly accepting whatever decisions are being made about what the safest and wisest decisions are about this?
Well, I would say that I have not felt any pressure from congregational members to open sooner rather than later. I think overall people appreciate a more cautious approach And I do hope that as we start a re-entry plan, that people will make decisions that are good for themselves, because we will continue our live streaming worship option once we come back into the building. Having said that, you know, I think what people are missing is that sense of community that comes when you are physically together, and those informal moments of being able to connect with one another, as well as the building has a great sense of history and importance in people's lives as they've experienced many sacred times. So I would say that there is more of a longing and a yearning to be able to be back together than there is a sense of pressure that we need to do this as quickly as possible.
I have a feeling that you probably would not be as comfortable with this decision as you are if it weren't for the robust online offerings that that your church is providing to its members. Maybe you could just give us a quick summary of the ways in which your congregation is continuing to function and, in a sense, continuing to gather, even if they're not doing so in person within the four walls of the church building.
Absolutely. We're thinking, and this is a whole new learning for us as a congregation as well. But we have been taking a look at, you know, high tech and high touch in the way in which we do ministry. And so we offer worship every Sunday morning through our website. We are continuing our committee meetings and doing that by Zoom. We're continuing Sunday school classes and looking at family and vacation Bible school through Zoom this summer for our children. And our teachers have been highly committed that they have been even extending the number of Sundays we have Sunday school into the summer for care of our children and families. We started another small group last night, a book study on Mere Christianity by C.S. Lewis on Zoom. Two more classes are starting on Thursday. And so we're finding ways to be able to connect with each other through technology, and grateful for those opportunities to be able to do that. On the other side, we have a number of congregational members, along with our pastor of congregational care, who are making weekly phone calls to people in the congregation, who are sending handwritten notes to members in the congregation, who are passing along prayer requests to people. The children and families are decorating and writing cards that are getting distributed. And so we're trying to find ways of how can we safely be in touch with our members. And lastly, I would say that, you know, one of the turnarounds of how it is that we can serve our community and be connected in that way is some of the opportunities that we've been doing have been canceled, but we started a Love in Action food and hygiene drive every other Sunday, of which we've collected over 4,000 items from people in the community and our congregation that have served those in need in Kenosha County.
In the meantime, I understand that you have something called the Vision Team that is going to be very carefully laying the groundwork for reopening in-person public worship. So clearly this is something that you are taking very, very seriously and not choosing not to rush into anything.
We are taking it very seriously, and we have a plan that is in work with deadlines as we kind of monitor the situation in, you know, Kenosha and Racine and just over the border in Illinois of the virus. But plans for cleaning, for social distancing, for traveling, for new ways of doing worship, all kinds of, you know, care. And one of the benefits that we have is having a large sanctuary. And so as we have removed all of the books and all of the pew pads and starting to get ready to come back, we also have markings all over the sanctuary where individual and family units will be able to sit during worship. So a number of items of how we do worship, of how people come into and leave the building safely, and what details we need to think about have been part of the Vision Team's plan.
Hmm. And more information is available at the congregation's website, which is firstumckenosha.org, firstumckenosha.org. Senior Pastor Reverend Susan Patterson-Sumwalt, thank you so much for joining me today on the morning show to give an update on how First United Methodist is handling the COVID-19 crisis. I appreciate your time and wish you and your congregation only the best as we go forward from here.
Thank you so much.
You're listening to The Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. On today's program, we are reconnecting with several area clergy who spoke with me on The Morning Show just before Easter to talk about how their respective congregations and parishes were trying to cope with the COVID-19 crisis. And now, on the eve of another major Christian holiday, namely Pentecost, we are reconnecting to talk about these congregations and what they are doing with the vexing question of whether or not to resume live in-person worship, and if so, when to do so and how to do so. I'm happy now to be speaking with Reverend Brad Brown, who is the pastor at North Cape Lutheran Church with a mailing address of Franksville, actually located in the village of Raymond. Pastor Brown, we welcome you back to The Morning Show.
Thank you. It's good to speak with you.
So I'm sure North Cape Lutheran, just like every other community of faith in southeastern Wisconsin and indeed in locations all across the country, are confronting this question of whether or not it makes sense at this point to resume in-person worship. First of all, explain to our listeners, for a church that is part of, in this case, the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, whose decision is this? Is this a decision that is rendered from on high, from church authorities, or is this left to individual churches to decide?
We have what we call an interdependent structure in the ELCA. Ultimately, the local congregation has a council that makes decisions about the local ministry, but we're supported and guided by resources that we receive from the Greater Milwaukee Synod and the churchwide offices of the ELCA. So we are blessed with the ability to tap into some expertise that's available through those channels, through our other connections with other aspects of the church.
So, for instance, at North Cape Lutheran, then, personally, then, whose decision is it? Is it your decision or the decision of your church council, or is this the kind of decision that is made in consultation with each other?
We have decided to make the decision through the church council. We have a meeting scheduled for June 4th, and we're going to be re-examining the status of the effects of the virus on our community and lining those up against some recommendations that we've received from the Wisconsin Council of Churches and the churchwide offices of the ELCA.
Give us some sense, particularly from the first thing that you mentioned, the Wisconsin Council of Churches, what kind of recommendations or guidance they are offering.
They have come up with a document that parallels the governor's Badger bounce back plan, and it has sort of a phased three-part reopening of services. And part of that is controlled by the trajectory of the virus and how quickly cases and fatalities of the virus continue to decline. There are some really sticky points that are vexing to people who like to worship, especially like at North Cape. We're such an intimate and small community, and it's difficult when we're used to being in a small historic structure and rubbing elbows with each other and sharing coffee and homemade desserts and shaking hands and, you know, embracing one another. And also singing is something that we have heard is much more potentially dangerous in spreading the virus than many of us would hope for, because the virus comes out in aerosol form and lingers longer in the facility. So what we're wrestling with is knowing that if we want to love our community and we want to love our neighbors and especially protect the vulnerable, even if we return to worship, it's going to be different than it was before. And that's going to bring some grief in and of itself to realize that when we come back, it's not going to be the same. Mm-hmm. And that makes the decision even more difficult for us. You know, what kind of experience will we be able to provide with social distancing, without singing, with the use of masks and protective gear, with the need to sanitize between services? All of those things are just going to make it so much less communal in its feeling and in its nature.
Right. It sounds like what you're saying is that coming back to the building is not going to be a return to normal, at least not in the near future, that even if the decision is made to return to in-person worship, it's going to be dramatically different. And that in and of itself will probably be a source of maybe disappointment or frustration for at least some parishioners.
It will, yes. But we are, you know, thinking about this in terms of the difference is part of our call to ministry right now. It's our call to compassion. It's our call to service to our neighbor. And I know, you know, part of the discussion right now in the wider community is about the nature of freedom. And I'm looking back to the teachings of the founder of our denomination, Martin Luther, who wrote a treatise that was called The Freedom of a Christian. And he has a pretty well-known line in that treatise where he says, "A Christian is perfectly free, Lord of all, subject to none. Yet a Christian is a perfectly dutiful servant of all, subject to all." And I think that is really the Lutheran Christian way that we approach that understanding of freedom, where we might be freed from concern that worship is required for our salvation or that certain religious practices are required for our salvation. We're free from any worry or concern about that. In the end, whether we worship in the building or whether we worship online, that does not have any eternal impact on us. And what's more important for us right now is the temporal concerns that we have about caring for our neighbors and how do we do that, and what risks do we take so that we can be compassionate and caring. So, for example, we have a partnership with Living Faith Lutheran in Racine, and we're going to be serving a community meal there on Sunday. And we're going to be using protective equipment, and it's going to be a grab-and-go service for the community. It won't be sitting at the tables and conversing like it used to be. But, you know, we are making those adjustments so that we can still provide for the hungry.
Hmm. What kind of guidance have you received from your specific church body, namely the ELCA, the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America? Do their recommendations largely align with that you receive from the Wisconsin Council of Churches?
Yes, they do.
So when you say that you are wrestling with some of these questions, what form is that wrestling taking? I mean, are we talking about long and involved discussions, or is this more of a wait-and-see process? I mean, how are you confronting some of these questions right now?
Yeah, that's a good question, because, you know, being a small country church, I think the greatest marketplace for ideas for us is the parking lot of the church. We would often have meetings, and then, you know, the real truths that people want to speak are shared with one another before they get in their cars and go home. And so it's, you know, that informal discussion that kind of percolates has always been really important to our church. And so now we have to be a little bit more intentional. So we have set up some small group meetings with, say, our worship leaders and musicians. We have some ministry team leaders that have convened online to talk about the issue. And then we'll also have our church council talk about it through an online forum. So we're trying to reach out to our small groups and our leaders to get that, you know, informal conversation going about things. Hmm.
In the meantime, how has online worship been working for you at North Cape?
We have really found that to be a silver lining in this whole experience. We started out with just me preaching a sermon, looking at the computer screen, and now we produce a film version of worship where we have graphics. We have someone who has people send in tracks of them singing the hymns, and he blends them all into a choir. We have video elements that we play over top of the reading of the lessons. Those lessons are read by families in their homes, and they send those in, and we blend them together. So it's been a really great understanding of what liturgy is. Liturgy, it means the work of the people. And, you know, editing all of this stuff together, having individual contributions come together in a really wonderful and well-produced format has really taught us what it means for each one of us to share our strength and contribute to the larger goal of praising and glorifying God.
Reverend Brad Brown is pastor at North Cape Lutheran Church in the village of Raymond. Pastor Brown, thank you so much for joining me today on The Morning Show. Best wishes to you and your congregation.
Thank you.
And to finish out today's morning show, I'm very, very happy that I can speak with Reverend Prentice Robbins, who is pastor of New Beginnings of Faith, which is affiliated with Church of God in Christ. And Pastor Robbins is also very, very active with the Racine Interfaith Coalition, so well-known in Racine, even beyond the four walls of his particular church and his particular community of faith. And Pastor Prentice Robbins, we welcome you to The Morning Show.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
I'd like to know, first of all, if I may, what life has been like for your church, New Beginnings of Faith, during COVID-19. Up to this point, what ways have you found to carry on with your ministry and your life as a congregation, given the restrictions that have been part of all of our lives during COVID-19?
You know, it's different. It's you know, it seems like it's the unknown. We have to change a lot of things that what we did before, of course. So everything just stopped, like the whole service, everything just stopped. People coming stopped. So that was a change, and it was sort of sad and stressful in a way also. But we made able to overcome by doing, you know, a lot of things, like probably people are doing Zooms, and Bible studies became more interesting because we have them online, and phone calls and that type of stuff. But there, since this have came about, I've seen a more loving community of people and encouraging one another, checking on each other. So that's the tough part. It's just not seeing each other's face other through the Zoom part, and touching each other with hugs, you know, because we come from an African-American church, and, you know, we like to hug on each other. Mm-hmm. And that's been difficult and hard.
How about your particular community of faith and any direct impact? We have read a lot about how COVID-19 has struck with a special ferocity in communities of color. And is this something that you have experienced very directly in terms of any members of your congregation or otherwise friends and acquaintances directly impacted by COVID-19?
Not my direct congregation, but family, friends, has impacted us. We hear a number of them every day dealing with these issues. And so that's been difficult. Not being able to go to the funerals where they're at. And so that's just so hard for a lot of us right now, struggling with a lot of that. So those are the issues that we're facing as a church and the friends that we know. It's just like you can give their condolence, but you just can't be there. And so that's been impacting. I had some family members in the South who really wanted to go to the funerals, but we just couldn't come because they weren't going to be able to allow us to see them. So that's been issues that we've been dealing with and struggling with.
Hmm. So what has it felt like to shift your worship to online formats like Zoom? It has to feel dramatically different from what a typical Sunday morning service would be with everybody gathered in the sanctuary. What has this adjustment been like for you and for your parishioners?
Well, we have a blended congregation. We have some people that are not Zoom or ready to be on, so that's been tough for them. So it's just training them to get on to Zoom. So that's been a difficult point, but once we get them on to Zoom, they seem like they like it more. It's been a struggle dealing with the issues of everybody coming together, and you still have that flavor of being in the church setting, but you have a connection with them through the Zoom lens, so that's how we're connecting with each other. So that's been a struggle. I'm with them, but we're keeping everybody together, and one of the goals is just to keep the people together, the ones that you have. Keep communicating with them, checking on them. So that's what the Zoom part has been doing for us in our areas. But from the service standpoint, you have music and you have songs, but it's not the feel like you have in a church. So that's a different thing for us.
Hmm. So one of the things that we are hearing about now with certain loosening of restrictions is the possibility of communities of faith returning to in-person worship. So for New Beginnings of Faith, what have the conversations been like around that possibility? And what decisions at this point have been made in terms of if and when you will return to in-person worship?
Well, that's difficult. Because you still have fear that's out there, and then fear is rightly so because it's unknown. And we do have, people saying, let's go right now, rush right back into church. But one of the approaches that we're going to take is that we've created a task force to look at what can we do differently in the church so that we can make sure that people are safe when they walk in the door, they feel comfortable when they walk in the door. The task force we have assembled is going to allow us to look at things differently. We know when we walk in the church, to be honest, we don't know what it's going to look like anymore. You have the six feet away pieces, the social distancing, issues. You have where you're going to be speaking at issues. Again, we're used to hugging people. You can't do that anymore. So it's so many things that we're going through right now through our church to make our church more safer for people to feel comfortable, and we're keeping safe. So before we even enter doors, if they said you can enter the doors tomorrow, if the task force hasn't said that we have everything in place, we won't open the doors until that is in place.
Very good. Before I let you go, I think it's important for us to talk about the horrifying story out of Minneapolis, Minnesota, involving the death of George Floyd, who died in police custody, and a disturbing scene caught on video. It has led, of course, to outrage from all quarters. And I wonder for you and the members of your community how you greeted this disturbing news and what you think we need to do in the wake of something so horrifying.
Well, I want to say this here first. I want to say before I go there, I want to make sure I say this here, and that is that when you look at COVID-19, how it's impacting the African-American community, these are the same social justice, racial issues that we're dealing with right now. A lot of people that are African-American or brown, you see a lot of these underlying issues, but they've been going on all the time. And so when you look at Minneapolis, it's heartbreaking to see that. There's no excuse for that. You know, I was a former police commissioner, and I was a former correctional officer. And with the experience I have with those two, when you look at what's going on within there in that video, you see a man that's handcuffed with another man having his knee on his neck, and he's asking for air. He has him in a position that even if he was to get up, he couldn't do anything because he's gasping for air. But he'd continue to lay it on there. And that's also, if I'm not mistaken, this same officer in 2006 had some other different charges that was never brought up by a grand jury. You see the mayor in the church, you see the mayor in the town is saying that he should have been fired. You know, I mean, he's been fired, but he should have been arrested, and I agree 1,000%. He should have been arrested. I'm surprised that the district attorney hasn't even moved on that. But this is the thing that we're seeing all over the land now. And there's videos after videos. You see people running and getting shot in the back. You see people sitting in their cars. So now, as an African-American man myself, or a brown man myself, do you put your hands up? Do you put your hands in the steering column? Do you say, yes, sir, no, sir? None of those things work anymore. They're still going to do what they want to do, and I think that has to change. I think there has to be policies that that we can govern ourselves. Now, to the riots that was happening, I think it was Target that I seen the other day. Target didn't do anything, so they shouldn't be held justifiable for people looting them. That's wrong, too. But I think marching is a way of expressing ourselves, and frustration is not with just the black community, but you see other people that are frustrated with that also as well. There was no reason for that gentleman to be, that police officer, to be having his knee on that gentleman's neck that long till you choked him out and died. So I think it's heartbreaking for the – I can't even imagine a family looking at that. We have COVID-19 that we're struggling with. We have the we have this police issue that we're facing right now. And I want to say all police aren't bad police. But there are some police that, you know, we have to be able to weed those out. Justice is justice. And you have not seen justice yet to me with this police officer until he comes down with some kind of indictment.
Well, I know a lot of people are very much in agreement with you and watching events in Minneapolis with very, very similar concerns. I really appreciate you sharing your thoughts, Pastor Prentice Robbins from New Beginnings of Faith and the Racine Interfaith Coalition. Thank you so much. Best wishes to you and to your whole community.
Thank you so much.
And my thanks once again to Father Ricardo Martin from Sacred Heart Parish in Racine, to Pastor Susan Patterson-Sumwalt from First United Methodist Church in Kenosha, to Reverend Brad Brown from North Cape Lutheran Church in Raymond, and finally, Pastor Prentice Robbins from New Beginnings of Faith and the Racine Interfaith Coalition. I appreciate their time. I'm Gregory Berg. A reminder once again that in the podcast edition of the morning show this weekend, two really interesting interviews from a long time ago. First Saturday from 2002, Tom Kircher and his wonderful book about Al McGuire, the longtime beloved coach of the Marquette basketball team. The book is Cracked Sidewalks and French Pastry, The Wit and Wisdom of Al McGuire. On Sunday, Alex Wellen, in a memoir from 2003, which he recounts his experiences of trying to pass the bar exam. His book is titled Barman, Ping Pong, Pathos, and Passing the Bar. You can